Support for this podcast is brought to you by Monthly Moist, the universe's best monthly lip balm subscription service. Never be without lip protection again. Get two surprise flavored sticks in your mailbox every month. Pop a cap and fight crack with Monthly Moist. Sign up at monthlymoist.com.
Straight up.
If you look at the history books on Texas history, we are savages or we're extinct. What kept me integrated and cohesive as a person is the food that my mom made.
Hey, I'm Mai with Dear Queer, and we are an all-inclusive podcast based out of Houston, Texas. We're also a Spectrum South podcast that centers queer voices
and cutie pock folks, which is really nice. That stands for queer, trans, people of color. But it's cute because it's called cutie pock.
Yeah, and all across the South.
So thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show.
Yeehaw.
Yo, what's up, everyone?
Hi.
Hey.
What was that?
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah.
Let's go. Goodbye.
I'm too tired for this, y'all.
What's up, y'all? It's been a hot second. Been going through some retrograde things.
Is this still Aries season or some shit like that?
It is still Aries season.
So yeah, tell us, Indy.
Tell us about it, Indisha. Tell us.
So it's the season of Aries, hot-headed ram things.
What the fuck does that mean?
I don't know anything.
They're angry all the time. They like don't really, I don't know. I'm a little bit biased against Aries. Let me stop. Anyway.
Oh, what's her name's? Never mind.
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it?
I mean, we can talk, of course. That's what we're here for. But, you know, I'm not here to slander Aries. I'm pretty sure there's like three or five of them that are okay.
don't
hit the three or five.
Don't the three or five Aries that listen to our podcast. Hey, what's up?
Right. The Aries that listen to Veer Queer are my fave.
Don't people like dunk on Geminis too?
Yeah.
Everyone has some shit to say about Geminis, which makes sense. I mean, there are some really awful Geminis. Donald Trump, Kanye West, Azealia Banks. a lot of them are
just
really
to name
awful.
A few.
Wow.
Just to name a couple of like, you know, particularly heinous Geminis.
Yeah.
But, like all in all, we're okay, I guess. Mm-hmm. Depends on the day, honestly. I tell people like I like to pick my mood out of a hat and then like squish it and do the opposite. So that's usually what you get that day.
Oh yeah.
I love it. I love the way you live your life, Indisha.
Thank you. Yeah. I know. I need help.
What is this equinox supposed to bring?
What?
What is the spring equinox supposed to bring?
Oh, well, spring is usually just lit all around already, just because the sun. Yeah, the sun's finally coming out. The snow caps are melting, the flowers are popping up, the birds are singing.
Oh my god.
It's just a great time.
You know what's popping up? The blue bonnets.
Pick them. Yeah. Go to jail.
Can you go to jail if you pick one?
Apparently.
That's what I heard.
Well, for real?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, I heard the blue bonnets are heavily surveillance and they have cameras everywhere.
On each petal.
On each individual petal.
Little tiny nanny cams that just can like watch out for pickers.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I had no amazing. Idea. Welcome to spring.
Welcome to springtime.
Holy day.
Hope your seasonal depression's a little bit better. That's going to be the tagline for spring.
Oh my God. It's
like seasonally depressed, but now with flowers surrounding you.
Yeah. Oh my God. But now with a flower crown.
Right. Exactly. Like Lana Del Rey depression, summertime sadness.
Oh my Why?
God. Isn't that basically like James Blake 2.0?
Yeah.
So how have y'all been? How are y'all? What's going on?
Oh, man. I am tired. I'm just tired of this rat race, y'all. Like, when are we going to set up this colony so I don't have to work anymore? I'm so sick.
I know. Seriously. I need someone to, like, pick us up so we can be, like, famous. Hey, Netflix.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm tired. I've been working my ass off like my entire life. And I'm like, for what? For bills? I don't even I could see if I had like a shoe collection or like a handbag collection or like nice fancy gadgets or some shit. Like I have nothing to show for the fact that I work all the time, except for my house. I get to stay in my house. That's about it.
I'm going to will this into existence right now that Netflix is going to pick us up and we're going to have our own show.
Netflix?
Yes, Netflix or Hulu, whoever.
Oh, amazing.
Some major network is going to pick us up and we're going to be rich and famous. I am willing that into existence right now, y'all.
Yeah. Existence. Yeah.
Existence.
That sounds dope. I'm down.
I feel like every time we check in, like, how are y'all? We're always like, we're fucking tired.
Dude, I've been fucking going through it, so.
Yeah, I know. How are you doing?
Yeah.
You doing good?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
Just going through it.
You want to unpack your feelings, Mai?
I wouldn't unpack my feelings, but it would need a content warning, and I think I would need like a whole episode to myself.
Yeah. I mean, Phil, you don't have to elaborate.
No, you don't.
Right. Know that we are here for you, and we're glad you're healing.
We love
Take
you.
Take your time.
Yeah. Y'all are amazing.
You're amazing.
Wow, family.
Incredible. Gamily. Yeah, no, I've been like grinding as well, like just working and doing this and trying to sleep. I've been sleeping really horribly lately, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I fucking went camping this weekend.
And oh my God, you are one of those gays.
Yes. And I mean, I'm going to survive the apocalypse. I don't know about y'all.
No, I'm going to fucking like just, nope. No, I'm going to die. It's fine.
Dude, there's this thing.
I plan on just exiting as soon as it gets hard.
As soon as it gets hard, I'm jumping ship. It's fine.
I'm definitely going to try to kill a couple of people.
Yeah.
Maybe some animals.
Yeah. Am I one of them?
No.
Nice.
Because you're already, why would I sacrifice, you know, like I'm not going to. <You're-
laughs> for practical reasons.
I won't, because that's like not worth it.
Wow, I am not worth getting killed for. Do you hear that? I'm not worth it. Wow, my.
Because I want to preserve your life.
What?
Wow. Sorry. Any desserts, Jillian?
Oh, yeah. That is my, desserts. Bring me desserts.
Eat your friends.
Eat your friends.
I guess I've been watching too much anime. I'm watching Hunter. What is it?
Hunter x Hunter?
Yeah.
You're watching anime? I didn't know you watch anime.
Yeah, I watch anime.
Nice. You know,
I had no idea you watch anime.
Yeah, I didn't know that
I just
either.
Don't talk about it. But I.
Okay. Is Mai a weeb?
What is
on
it
the mean? Next episode of Beer Queer? Mai's face just like shocked.
Well,
not
I have.
Not gonna lie. Huh? I think cosplaying is pretty cool, and if I could afford it, I probably would be a weeb. I'd be a cosplaying weeb all day with all the wigs and the costumes. I think it's actually really tight.
Yo, honestly, cosplaying's really expensive. Like, I did it a couple of times, and they were, like, really low-key cosplays. So I can't even imagine spending money and, like, actually getting, like, armor. Not, like, real-ass armor, but, like, getting, like, breastplates and getting, like, I don't know how you would construct, like, armor suits, but whatever, right? Like that shit's expensive. So I feel that.
Yeah. No.
I started watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I haven't seen that. I've seen like maybe an episode or two, but I haven't seen it like all the way. Yeah. I didn't really watch anime growing up because it was like a interpersonal thing, because I wasn't trying to be more Asian.
Oh my
God, damn it. God fucking damn it.
I mean, like, but I like,
you know, it's
I
like
sympathize
I'm already
with that.
I already got stinky food.
Oh, I mean, like, no, I sympathize with that. I do. I watched anime a lot more when I was younger, but then like kids really like I went to school with made it seem like if you watch anime you were really weird, so I like internalized that and I like, stopped watching it altogether. But now everyone's like, oh my God, anime's so cool. I'm like, oh, I guess it's okay to watch anime and talk about it now. So now I've been like openly more like, yeah, I watch anime when nice. Like I there's a chunk of my life where I like really like didn't do that at all, or tried not to, because I was like, no, I'm not one of those kids.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Not one of those girls. Not like other girls.
Yeah, that's how it was, but you know how it goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's it. That's all I got.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about the guest that we have on today?
Oh yeah, our guest today, we have Adan Medrano. He is a food writer and a food
filmmaker. Yeah,
a documentary
maker
and
filmmaker
film person.
Yeah. Whatever the term is.
Yeah, and he's about to do a documentary, and it's, you know, he's from Houston and he's traveled all around.
Is he from Houston?
Well, right now, currently, he's local to Houston. Yes.
Okay.
But lives in San Antonio,
Yeah, he's from San Antonio, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But he currently lives in
here.
Got mm-hmm. it. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, he's going to basically tell us
about his film.
Yeah, all the stuff in the film.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to talk to him about the way that he views food rather, and how he views Texas indigenous cooking as a form of resistance. And so mm-hmm. that's what I would be really interested to talking with him about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I'm from Houston, Texas. And so I think that'd be really rad as a Latinx person. I learn a little bit more about indigenous communities here.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. Okay, well.
But yeah, let's take it to the interview. So today in the studio, we have Adan, right? Am I saying that wrong? Right? Ryan?
Right? That's right.
Medrano? Yeah.
Yay. Snaps.
Cool.
Snaps my.
Yeah. And you're a local chef and a food writer and currently working on a documentary?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Documentary.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. I love it.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you have?
When Spectrum South came to us about we have this person named Adan that's doing this documentary and doing all these things that pertain to Texas indigenous cooking. And to me, that's really, really interesting because I feel like I don't know a whole lot about the indigenous culture here in Texas, right? And so I just kind of wanted to jump in and ask you a little bit about why did you focus on Texas indigenous cooking? And I also want to know why you affirm that on your documentary, it's not a cooking show. Because that's something that they told us. And I was like, oh, well, I want to know his thoughts about that.
Yeah. Thank you. It's not a cooking show. If you look mm-hmm. at the Food Network and a lot of these cooking shows, food is not really the subject. Food is a prop mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. many other things. And they don't have the in-depth respect that culinary mm-hmm. arts has. To me, it's about memory, identity, and living in Texas as an indigenous person. The indigenous people of Texas mm-hmm. were here about 400 generations ago. That's about 15,000 years ago. And we've been erased. If you look at the history mm-hmm. books on Texas history, mm-hmm. we are savages or we're extinct. And mm-hmm. we're neither. We're here. And to me, what kept me integrated and cohesive as a person is the food that my mom made.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was our memory. We ate that. We knew it was special for ours. For us, it was unique. And it was the way that we kept memory alive.
Yeah.
Who cooked that recipe? And it was also a way to fight hegemony.
Everyone wants
you to be white and to be acculturated, and we were different and we loved it and mm-hmm. we celebrated it. So it's a draw.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to cooking school, I was absent. We learned everything. We learned French cooking. And,
mm-hmm. and did you go to cooking school in the States?
The Culinary Institute of America.
Okay.
I first started to go to the New York campus. They opened a campus in San Antonio.
Yeah.
So I went there.
Uh-huh.
And boy, was I ever surprised.
Yeah, because you would think San Antonio.
Right. So what they ended up doing is teaching us about Mexican cooking in central Mexico, Oaxaca, uh-huh. Puebla, Veracruz.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what about McAllen and San Antonio, which is where I grew up? And we have 10,000 years of history.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The only there are two things that I read and that upset me, and I wrote an evaluation of it. Mm-hmm. The first thing was, In the United States, the Pilgrims were the first people to arrive on the continent. And I read that. I said, they mean the first Europeans, but they didn't say that. They said the first people.
People, right.
And the second thing was, I'm a Chichimeca. My mother told me you're Chichimeca, which is a very old community of people that are very large in the region where we lived. Mm-hmm. And there were many subgroups within that, and it includes San Antonio. So she told me that. And I read in the course description, Chichimecas were very poor and they ate their young.
Oh what? God.
They actually.
Wow. You're savages.
We're savages. I read that. So I said, this is ridiculous. So we graduated.
Oh my God.
And I started writing. I said, we need to write about our food. People erase us.
Yeah.
They think of us as savages. And it's about time that we started telling. We've been telling our stories, but we don't have access to the publishing places. Right. We've been left out. Yep. So, but we've kept it alive in the intimate spaces of our home. And it is the women who have driven that. Mm-hmm. It is the women who have driven not only the cooking technologies, but they have created the culinary traditions that we remember.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, we will celebrate this and we will affirm who we are because this is my identity and this is my memory. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I decided to write the book. I said, this is another way that we keep teaching ourselves. Mm-hmm. Every time you cook a dish, you are narrating your history and who you are. So that's why I did it.
I feel it so close in my heart. You know what I mean? I'm a first generation American. I come from a line of really strong women from El Salvador, right? And though my mom hasn't really taught me how to cook, I would love to go to my tia's house and she would just cook like traditional Salvadorian food. And it's just, one time I had asked her, like, tia, how do you make this rice? And she was like, oh, I don't know. I just like throw things here and there. And I'm like, no, like, I want you to like tell me how you make this so you can pass it down to me. So that way I know how to make this. And so it's just like, I see you. You know what I mean?
You'll have to be standing right by her and actually do it because this happens to me all the time with
all
my cousins and my aunts. Well, you just put this and you just do that.
Exactly.
Well, when I was writing the book, I had to do that to actually measure because in my first book, there are 100 recipes that I tested in my test kitchen. Well, and there, if you follow step one, step two, step three with all the measurements, it'll be really delicious, but it takes a while to get from
to
the
just
point.
Know what a dash is.
Right. Yeah, a dash. Yeah,
what is a dash?
What's a dash?
No, but it's just funny because it's true. They're like, I had to stand next to my tia and be like, hold on. But how much was that? She's like, I think a tablespoon. I don't know. I'm like,
you gotta test it. You know?
Yeah, like, you gotta test it. I know.
So, which is the way I cook. Most chefs cook that way. Mm-hmm. You throw it in and then you taste it.
Yeah. You're good.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's cool.
I thought it was off.
No, it's cool.
That's my, I have to remind my partner to take his pills these days.
Oh, I get that. Oh,
amazing.
No, amazing. So. Oh, man, I need to do that for my partner.
Let's get our partners on.
Yeah, let's start. I'm going to do it right now.
We care.
Yeah, we care.
Depends on how many entries you have on your cell phone, the degree that you care.
I know. No, but you had mentioned books. Do you mean cookbooks?
Cookbooks.
Okay.
Mine is a different type of book because... Yeah. It combines history book and cooking. It's a combination cookbook. Mm. It's the first book of its kind. It's a peer-reviewed book. It's published by Texas Tech University Press.
Oh, wow.
Because then you've got to have it peer-reviewed. So in my case, the three disciplines are food anthropology, Native American history, and archaeology.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because I wanted our story, because it was going to be told the first time that was told in writing, to be vetted by those people that I felt were going to be very, very anti-story. Because many people don't like the fact that we are growing in power, our voice is getting stronger, and over 500 years, cooking has been the radical resistance to colonization. And they're afraid of that. Many people are threatened by that. Mm-hmm. Instead of celebrating it, they're threatened by it.
I love that you said that. Just because I love food and I love cooking also. And I'm also first generation. So I like cooking what my mom made and previous generations. But this reminds me a lot of the show. I forgot her name, but she does the acid salt fat. Fat acid salt or something like
it's
that.
It's on Netflix. Right. It's like salt, fat. I forgot the name of the acid.
Oh, I don't know it.
Basically just the main ingredients you need for any kind of dish, no matter where, what region you're in.
Yeah, it's like salt, fats, acid, and I think, is it spice?
That would be salt.
Salt. I don't know.
Water.
Yeah.
Oil.
But yeah, that's the same thing. Well, I guess just like going around different regions, but yours is specifically, you know, North America.
Well, it is North America, but there is a universal part to it, which is indigenous. And being indigenous means you are in touch with the land. So you could be German, you could be other. And when we say I'm first generation or second generation, I would like to revisit that phrase that we use as Latino and Latina, Latinx people, because if you come from Saltillo, Mexico, and you say, I came over, if you look back before 1848, that was part of our region. The river was not a border, so no one came over. They simply crossed the border from one bank to another. Yeah. And so the indigeneity part of Latinx people means we are of this land. So El Salvador, before the arrival of 1528, when the first European came to Texas, before then, we were in communication with Mexican-American. Houston was. So in a very real sense, El Salvador and Honduras are of this land.
Yeah.
And so you're probably 200 generations here.
Yeah.
If you see here as the land that was before the war and the invasion came.
Yeah.
So I would like, I just go on and saying, when people ask me, where are you from? I say, I'm from here. Where are you from?
Yeah.
No, it's true. I've been here for 10,000 years. Yeah. And so even Salvador, Honduras, we have an indigenous to us that is one, because we were one region before the invasion and the separation.
Yeah.
This geopolitical thing. So we have to love the land that we are as Latino people, people, and celebrate it. And these barriers are artificial. Yeah. To me, they're artificial.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we are basically Mexico. This is basically
Anthropologists call Houston and San Antonio Greater Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It goes all the way up to the West Coast.
Yes. Well, this was one cohesive region.
Right. Yeah.
This is a Native American region. And it's becoming more and more the way that we should talk, the way that we do talk. Because if you look at food, people say, well, is this like, is the tomato Mexican? Should we take it across the border? Because when you cross the Rio Grande, you have customs. And I said, look at it differently. For hundreds of years, the birds were taking the seeds, and they still do. Mm-hmm. They'll just fly over and they'll deliver the seeds elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd turn this off.
You got to make sure you really tell your partner what's
Richard,
going on.
Richard, if you're listening, it's time, to put the baking on the, it says it was, I'm very sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. This is fun. This is fun.
Well, this reminds you, all of you who have partners, I've been with my partner now. We'll be celebrating in July, 46 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
That's so sweet.
That's so sweet. My heart.
Which is why this phone won't shut up. I think he put something. Anyway, my point is that we really need to be more celebratory.
Yeah.
And you know what else has been erased? Women's role. Because every time I talk to every chef whom I interview who are top chefs, it all goes back to their mother or their aunt. Every one of them will say that.
Yeah.
I have this thing about, you know, like cooking is definitely a matriarch thing, you know, it happens in the kitchen and women do it. And so ever since, I mean, like white men got into it, it became a competition. And ever since then, you know, like white men have these shows and they're given all these deals, you know, just to represent these things. And it's like, you learned that from a woman, you know?
And you didn't learn this macho thing. Number one, competition. Number two, war. Everything is a metaphor of war. Oh, it's a big, I mean, look at the television and then they say block and this and that. These are male things that they have interjected. I hate it. We need to have more shows.
Yeah. Like I learned cooking from my dad for sure. But like learning the traditional foods that I really enjoy, I learned it from my tia. So like I totally I level with that when it's a maternal thing that you learn from your mom or from your tia or whoever, right? Or your mm-hmm. abuela or whoever else, you know? Because that's the other thing too, is that I learned how to love Salvadorian food as a kid because of my mama. I mean, she's my mama, but she's my abuela. That's just yes. what I call mm-hmm. my abuela.
That's how we have mm-hmm. kept our identity intact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the food is in a very sacred, intimate space mm-hmm. of the family. Mm-hmm. And we know that's our identity.
Yeah.
And it also has memory because mm-hmm. then it's my grandmother, my great-grandmother, yeah. and so yeah. forth. So.
It's also like sharing food with your family. It's like not even your family, but like with your friends, your loved ones. It's an act of love as well. Like mm-hmm. I was trying to explain this to my partner, that I was like, people that come into my home, like that, I want that to be a safe space. You know what I mean? Like I was raised that you always ask your guests, like, are you good? Do you need any food? Like, you know, like really take care of them.
Right.
And to exchange food with them is an act of love. It's like, this is the greatest form of love that I can give you, is to make sure that you are fed and my food is good enough for you to eat it, right?
And we break in bread.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But hospitality too, yeah. right? But that's why like I tell my partner, like, yeah, I don't really eat pork, but if someone offers me something with pork, I feel bad to say no, because I was raised that like you
it's
take the food. Yeah, it's a gift, right?
Indeed.
And I feel like I'm insulting that person if I don't take the gift, even if it's not that deep. Mm-hmm. That's just how I internalize the exchange of food like that.
Right.
And I don't know if that's something you experience as well, Mai.
I definitely think it's, you know, cultural similarity.
Yeah.
Between and it's like, you know, breaking bread. So you're sitting down and eating, and then your mom's like, you need to eat this. And your grandma or whoever is always like trying to shove food down your face.
What about you and Geisha?
I know that.
As far as what?
Like the cultural exchange of food in the house. Like, did you experience that as well?
Yeah, food has always been a really big part of my family. Before my grandmother passed away, she was the main person that would cook for everyone for different holidays, different meals. Everyone would come over and kind of just eat traditionally the same food, which at the time when I was younger, I didn't really appreciate it. But now that I'm like all the way out here, I would probably kill for some greens and some mac and cheese that actually like seasoned correctly. But yeah, it's totally a family thing, a familiar thing, offering other people food, having your family all come together, even if mm-hmm. you guys never talk at all, but that one holiday, everyone comes over to the one person's house. And also what you're always saying about having having most cooking done by mostly mm-hmm. female counterparts in the family, sometimes and all the time, but most of the time. I remember, you know, my grandmother and my aunts, my mom all kind of getting together and cook and trying to teach me how to cook. I wasn't really that into it just because they made it seem like I was learning to cook for families, and I was like, I don't want to cook for a family myself, but now I don't know how to cook at all. So it's like I kind of missed out on that part of learning. Adana, I had a question for you. What are some of the things that are traditional that are still, like, as far as cooking the food that you like to cook and the food that you like to make? What are the things that have gone back traditions? Like, what are some of the things that are always going to always be there in every meal that people have been doing for thousands and thousands of years? Because I think it's really interesting, like, the methods that everyone uses and how they never really change. So what are some methods that you usually use in your cooking that have been passed down in your family?
Well, the traditional techniques that mm-hmm. women invented, by the way, and I will repeat, women are the engineers, have been the engineers of cooking technologies that we have mm-hmm. today. Roasting, baking, steaming are traced back to the earth ovens mm-hmm. where you would dig a hole and then you would, depending on the amount of maguey leaves that you would mm-hmm. put into the hole, that's the amount of moisture that would go into the meal.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, mm-hmm. today's electric metal heating iron that goes inside your oven.
Oh, like the cast iron?
Actually in the oven, the heating element of your oven, you mm-hmm. can turn it to 250, to 300,
yes.
etc.
Okay.
Well, that was invented by the use of rocks. It, depending on the way that the rock keeps and releases heat. That's the way you would cook. If you wanted slow cooking, you would take a rock that releases heat very, very, very slowly. That's the rock you would put in there. If you wanted something high heat and heat it very, very fast, you would put a different rock. Mm-hmm. So this technology was very precise and it allowed for different textures in the food. Mm-hmm. So we still do that. We still bake, roast. Of course, we do it in an electric oven, not in the ground. And steaming, all of these. What we didn't do is we did not have deep frying in this region. Mm-hmm. That's a very European that was brought over, as was lard and those. So going back to the original way of cooking is healthy.
Yeah.
And I do not, I am not a person who is a purist in that sense.
Yeah.
I think I eat everything and I like new traditions because that's the way you can grow. When you meet someone else, you are going to change. Are you willing to change? Mm-hmm. And that's the way things were. If you get very rigid, women do not have to know how to cook.
Right.
Just because you're a woman doesn't mean that you got to be in the kitchen. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, right, right.
If you like it, fine. But traditionally, cooking has been women's roles. But in indigenous North America, women were warriors as well. Women were also horse women, and they excelled and they were honored by it. They didn't have to stay in the kitchen if they didn't want to. Men who were supposed to ride horses and hunt, many of them wanted to be in the kitchen and took on women's roles.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing with gay and you're a woman, therefore you belong here, all these stereotypes and categories were not present in our original peoples of Texas and Latin America and North America.
Yeah, that's why Two-Spirit exists, right?
Yes.
Two-Spirit, in my first book, I write about the fact that they were honored. Men who, some even dressed like women and they cooked in the kitchen.
Oh man, I'm going to cry. Women.
Some women dressed like men and they were honored because they were really good at what they did.
Yeah. And so that reminds me, like, I always thought the version of like they, them is derived off of indigenous language, because at first it was like Z, Za, or like X even, I think.
X-E?
Or just X.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I'm not entirely too sure about the X, but I know about the Z and Za, like, because those are non-gendered, you know, terms within.
The gendered terms coming from languages in Europe, Spanish and others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also Spanish is a colonized language too. Yeah. So
both English and Spanish are languages of conquest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if they say, "Oh, you don't speak Spanish, you're not, that's your mother tongue."
Oh,
that is not my mother tongue.
Oh my God. Yeah. I got that because I'm not bilingual. And so I would get so much shit from people being like, "Oh, you don't speak Spanish, you're not really Hispanic." I'm like, you know, Spanish, like after, like as a kid I didn't like get it, I would get like pissed about it, but as an adult now I'm just like, but you do know that like Spanish is a colonized language.
It's a language of
so
we do keep some forms of our original languages. In 1528, when the first Spaniard landed in Galveston, they were shipwrecked and they were naked and they were dying, and the local Carrancoa people saved them and fed them. And we still keep, but they, of course, they spoke indigenous languages, which in my home, we call our mother Ama, not Mama, which is Spanish. We say Ama and Apa, which is a Navajo type of language. So in those intimate spaces, there are words that go way back. And it's just the same thing we do with our food.
It's like Opa and Oma.
Yeah. No, like I love learning about all this stuff, right? Because I came out as non-binary about a year ago and I thought it was one of those, like, you know, I didn't know anything about it. I was just kind of like, oh, this is like something that I felt for a long time. And now there's a language that exists, right? Like, or so what I thought, that explains what this is. But then this whole year I've been learning that, like, actually it's existed in indigenous cultures.
This is like our culture.
Yeah.
What happened was, you know, when Christianity, well, Catholicism arrived, that's when all of this categories of don't do this, don't do that, they just destroyed the fluidity and the beauty and the harmony of human sexuality. And how it really is, not how someone wants to dictate it to be. In my first book, I talk a little bit about how we honor they, people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in my next book, which comes out next month, it's called, by the way, it's called Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Nice. Mexican Cooking. And I do say, I don't spend a lot of time, but I do mention that binary understanding mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. Of sexuality is not traditional. It's mm-hmm. not indigenous yeah. and it's very harmful yeah. because it limits you as a human being.
Yeah.
It's some man's scholar's category that was devised, I don't know, some fear or whatever,
yeah.
but it is not real.
Yeah.
And it, so if you look at the indigenous people, mm-hmm. and in my book, in my next book, I talk about women who were hunters and they yeah. were honored, and men who were just really good at cooking and mm-hmm. they were yeah. honored. So this fluidity
yeah.
is part of our history and it's part yeah. of our civilization.
Right. It's part mm-hmm. of who we are.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to track back because you were talking about integrating new age things with also cooking. I don't know. Have you tried? So I guess that's what I like about Houston, because like we're all about integrating things and fusion, mm-hmm. fusing things or whatever. But one of my favorite restaurants, not favorite, but like really nice restaurants that I've went to recently was a Oaxacan restaurant. And I didn't know, like, they used sweet potatoes or whatever in their dishes with, like, spices and stuff like that. I think the restaurant was called, like, Sochi or something.
Yes,
yeah.
Downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, so when you're cooking and integrating, you know, and I guess using your writing and all that, how do you fuse the two together?
Thank you. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I wish I had brought my molcajete. The last time that I did a mm-hmm. radio interview, I brought my molcajete. Molcajete oh, wow. is the name of a volcanic rock mm-hmm. mortar and pestle, which is mm-hmm. indigenous to Mexico and to this region wow. lately. And I started banging it to mash garlic, black pepper, and cumin, which mm-hmm. is the Trinity spice of Mexican American mm-hmm. cuisine. And I asked the viewers if they knew, and we started getting calls because that sound is a sound yeah. that people grew up with.
I love it.
And I love
it. That mortar and pestle, it's volcanic rock, is a metaphor for the fusion that you're talking about. I say yeah. that molcajete is the metaphor for our people, mm-hmm. and it is the metaphor for food, not just yeah. our food, because mm-hmm. you put disparate elements in there, mm-hmm. and then you start mashing them together. Out of difference, you create harmony and mm. deliciousness
yeah.
that then you can use to invite people
yeah.
to share their different ideas so that they can grow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I want to hone in on that because I do feel like that there is a way to do cultural exchange in a way that's respectful and being like, hey, like, we want to fuse these things together, but doing it where we all share ideas together, right? So I really like that metaphor.
And it becomes more delicious.
Yeah.
If you think of the two types of encounters mm-hmm. that we've seen recently, the first one is the conquest, the Spaniards mm-hmm. and the Europeans colonizing us. Mm-hmm. The second type of encounter is one that is beginning to take shape, and it's not just ours, but yeah. it's this nonviolent confrontation mm-hmm. where you're not lame and passive. You're very aggressive and very active, mm-hmm. but in a nonviolent way. But mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that, it still means that the government yeah. is uncomfortable. It still means that the oppressor is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're going to lay down. Mm-hmm. But I mention that because the encounter is a chance for us to grow. Mm-hmm. What is an encounter? An encounter is, if I meet someone who is yeah. different, do I quash because I'm afraid and therefore mm-hmm. which is a reaction that many people have?
Yeah.
Or do I see the other and then the other becomes the opening for me mm-hmm. to change myself? Mm-hmm. How are my ideas going to change and grow? And hopefully the other person is also saying and thinking, I've met someone who's really different. I've never met someone as strange or as odd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How will this enrich me? And to be open to that, that's the level of encounter mm-hmm. that I want to promote through
yeah.
cooking.
Okay.
I love that.
I think the aesthetic of cooking that women do in the kitchen and, mm-hmm. and gays yeah. or men mm-hmm. that we all do in the kitchen is the artistic aesthetic that we should do in politics, yeah. in economy, and in society. Mm-hmm. Because that aesthetic says, out of difference, you can create harmony. Mm-hmm. And if you don't deal with difference, you're going to end up being really upset with your bland food all the time.
I know, like, I could literally sit and talk to you all day about like indigenous culture and like learn from you, but I definitely want to talk a little bit about the film that you have, correct?
Yes.
So my question, like, because I read a little bit about it before, you know, I came in and interviewed you, right? I mean, not me, but like everyone, right? So what gave you the concept for the film? What made you sit back and be like, you know what, I've written a book, or you wrote a book and you're writing a second one, but now you're gonna make a film. Like, what made you want to do that?
I was dragged. Mm-hmm. Kicking and screaming into it. I didn't want to. I was a producer for 20 years. I was doing documentaries and television shows. Yeah. I used to work at CBS doing national news program in New York. And I thought I was done with that part of my life. Mm-hmm. I wanted to love cooking and spend my time in my kitchen. So after I wrote the book, my life has been one of philanthropy the last 23 years. Mm-hmm. I was a grant maker. So I traveled all over the world making grants to socially oriented justice programs. Mm-hmm. And I met all kinds of filmmakers because we were funding media.
Yeah.
Two of them whom I met from Uruguay, who are now working on the film, they're from Montevideo, and they read the book. They're friends of mine. And they said, we want to do a show. And I said, no, I'm not going.
You're like, no.
That's in my past. And so they said, well, we'll just do it if you will be the consultant. We want to make sure that it's based on your book. They said, we can do a 30-minute show. I said, well, a 30-minute show is fine. We could do that, 30 minutes, because I've done 30-minute shows. So like, they started.
Perfect.
And then we filmed, and then we went on the road to shoot 22 hours over 9 days in a documentary style. And they got me hooked.
Oh, yeah.
And then they called me and they said, this can't be done in half an hour. We have a movie in our hands.
Yeah.
And so that's how I really wanted to do the book and cooking. And then they were these filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I would not have done it because it's a lot of work and it takes a lot of attention.
Yeah.
The reason I decided to do it is because of the producer, Virginia Diaz. Mm-hmm. Virginia Diaz is also from San Antonio. She's a Chicana woman who, a producer, who has been in Houston producing feature films. Mm-hmm. Actually, she's been on location manager for feature films. She's got a very, very strong career. And I was looking for a producer because I couldn't do it. And she was recommended by the Houston Film Commission. We met. She fell in love with the book. It turns out that this was the food that she grew up with.
Wow. Yay!
She saw the pictures. She says, that's my mother's cooking. I grew up with that food. Wow. So she said, I want to be part of this project. Yeah. That's her. She's originally from San Antonio, me.
Who would I know?
When she signed on, I said, okay, then I'm in. Mm-hmm. Besides, it's great to have a producer who understands the food, and she does.
Right.
Dang. San Antonio was the first time I've ever had barbacoa. And I know that they cook that in the stone. In the, I guess, the leaves, I don't know.
Isn't that delicious? I don't know. That's in our film.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah? Yes,
we showed it last Friday when we showed rough edits.
Oh, no.
Usually,
I couldn't have made it.
It was great. So a big scene is this family in the west side of San Antonio that has this tradition for many generations. Actually, it's a 5,000-year-old tradition because there are oven pits in archaeological digs that have been carbon dated 4,500 years ago. So the fact that they did it in June is simply a continuation of a 4,000-year tradition.
Right.
So it's just another way of breaking out of the way that history has been written and the way certain people want our history to be written. Yeah. It's not their history. It's our history. We have to write it because all we have to do is look around us and see how the way we act and the way we do things and the way we celebrate does not conform to that.
Right.
That's
a whole other story.
You're like, I could go on.
Right.
What's the name of your film?
It's the Roots of Texas Mexican Food. We may change the title, but that's a really good title.
I like that. I like that title.
Yeah.
The tagline is across towns and cities of Texas, indigenous cooking is the anchor of memory, identity, and community.
I love that.
Yeah, and then the second is, and is being the work of women. It has been and continues to be the radical resistance to colonization and hegemony. And that goes to the heart of who food is. It is that sacred. It is that powerful. I mean, if you think of what you eat, and my goodness, we should treasure it. We've lost some of it with the society in which we live. You know, you're all we're all part of this society. And tell me about some of the foods that you, because this is intergenerational, I think. I'd love to, the foods that you eat that we've been talking about, traditional things, but they change and it becomes hip again. And what are the things that you think are formative that you really love?
Now, for me,
you go first.
For me, it would be banh mi and pho. That everyone has all like, I hate the way that, well, because I'm Vietnamese. That's what my mom is. I'm my background. I love the food, but I hate the way that it has transformed. I think, I guess I hate the way that pho has transformed.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, there's videos of like people like how to eat pho and like how to, you know, how to do these things and all that. And I'm like, it's just noodles and you just eat it.
Like, that's also one of those things that as a kid, I wonder, maybe I'm not, I mean, obviously I didn't live your life, but I'm wondering too, if that comes from this thing of maybe you, like people would look at you weirdly if you brought that to school or something, or if you told people this is what I ate at home.
Yeah, I mean, I ate really stinky shit and I loved it. Like fermented things. That's what we were known for, is like fermenting beans, tofu, any.
But
know,
it's super cool now, Mai.
And it's,
yes, it is. It is. The fermentation is coming back.
I mean, hey, fermentation is cool. But it's like what Maya was just talking about, how it's like, you know, it's one of those things where when you're a kid, you get picked on for that kind of shit. You know what I mean? And now it's like the trendy food thing that's happening right now. And it's just like, on one hand, like cool, but on the other hand, like, you know. I think for me, like, I used to really hate pupusas for some reason.
Hated pupusas?
I hated them because, like, I love because the ones I always ate were really greasy. And I understand that that was like the thing of them, but it's just like it always made me feel sick every time I eat them. But then as an adult, I started learning how to venture out to get like really, really good pupusas, and the ones I eat now aren't like that. So I'm just like, yeah, buddy. And also, I hated the smell of platanos. Like in my mama's apartment, it would just stink up the whole place, and I was just like, why? But then like now she's gone, and so I never took advantage of like how to learn how to make platano. So I think for me, I really appreciate them now, not only because I realized like, why would you ever think that, like they're great, right? But also it goes back to memories, you know, that like I love eating them and I love smelling them because it reminds me of my mama and being in that smelly ass apartment as a child, right? But yeah, no, I would say like pupusas and platanos are some of the foods that like I really enjoy, dear to my heart. And I'm also Mexican too, but I didn't grow up with a lot of Mexican food. Actually, a lot of it was Salvadorian food, because I grew up with my mom's side of the family. Well, before
what about
go on, Indisha. What about you?
Foods that I used to eat that I eat now. What was the question? I'm sorry.
I was interested in we've been talking so much about traditional foods, and to me, they're not traditional because they're always changing and they're modern. But because this is an intergenerational discussion in some ways, I was asking what kinds of foods now, whether they're fast foods or other, that are part of your life and that you really love and that you want to be part of your life. They're formative.
I see stairs in my Warburger cup.
There's a lot. I would really, really love to have some really, really good soul food out here. There's a couple places that, like, you know, they do their thing, but it's always a little bit too meaty for me. Like, I don't hate meat, but it's not my favorite. And I feel like a lot of the times when it comes to like soul food or Southern cooking, people just overcompensate by putting meat in everything. So I've been on a hunt on the hunt for some really good, like either vegetarian friendly options or like vegan soul food, just so I can still get that taste without being like, oh, here's my greens with, you know, turkey in it or pork in it.
Yeah.
Also, even though that sometimes is delicious, but I'm not, you know, the biggest fan of that.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you both mentioned fermented food and pupusas, because I had both of those within the last couple of days. I had pupusas for dinner last night after work. And then a couple hours ago, I had kimchi with
amazing.
Poke.
Amazing.
So, yeah, exactly. Just eating myself around the world.
Right. Wow. You're so cultured.
I know. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. But. Well, before my wraps up, I just had a couple more questions about your film, if you don't mind. I want to know where are you in the production process and how can people support your film?
Thank you. I have been notified. Well, not just, but that the funds that we received from the National Association of Latino Arts and Cultures for finishing the funds are going to be able to be spent next month. And we think that by next month, we will have the first real 70 minutes of the cut.
Yay.
So that'll be really great. We have 21 and a half hours that we shot last June over 9 days.
Oh my God.
And we think that we're very close to a full length 70 minutes. It'll still have to change. I think the core of the film, the core of the story remains the same as the radical resistance. Yeah. But the elements of radical resistance is what matters. And it's the harmony, identity, memory, cohesiveness of community. These things are the elements of resistance. Yeah. So that's where we are. And how can you help?
Yeah, how can we help?
We have a Facebook webpage, The Roots of Texas Mexican Food, and you can keep up to date about what we're doing. And if push comes to shove, we may ask for a GoFundMe if
Do
we get to
it.
that.
Yeah, we'll post it.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have any upcoming things, or you have another preview?
Another
watch party.
We had a watch party last Friday, and it's an art performance.
Okay.
And it did two things: film as an art form and food as an art form. Mm-hmm. Normally people say food is, if you have a party, people throw together something to bite on and it's an afterthought. To me, it's very central. So what we're doing is when we're showing these films, we have food that shows the cooks, because it's the cooks that are in our film. So that Friday we had I cooked with seven home cooks from that community, all of them women, and they served the food, and it was absolutely delicious. So those are the types of things we will be doing. I think the more that we see food and film as art, the more we will no longer be spending money on these fast food items that really are making us sick. If you look,
as he stares at my Whataburger cup,
your Whataburger cup with the, well, I call them commercial cultural poachers of our food. They took our tacos, which are delicious and not
they're crunchy
fatty.
Now. They're crunchy.
Crunchy is a new development that was created by the U.S. Anglo people. That those are not the original. Deep frying is not traditional.
No.
And so these types of food have created a terrible health problem in our community with diabetes, obesity, which then creates heart problems.
Yeah.
And this is because of the way that we eat.
Yeah.
People say, well, stop eating that way. It is not an individual's will. It is the society in which we live, which is unjust.
Totally.
You have food deserts.
Yep.
You've got low wages, which inhibit your ability to buy healthy food. Yep. So it is a society that is causing this. We've got to start making those. Corporations that control food are culprits, and we have to name them as culprits instead of saying, oh, go on a diet, start a healthy food. That doesn't work. That is not the problem. Individual moral will of individuals is not the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is the corporate control of food distribution and advertising.
Yeah.
That is where we need to make the change.
Yeah.
And we got to start pointing the fingers at them. That's a terrible problem to have. And it's not very joyful for me to eat that sort of. So just remember, commercial, cultural poachers. They take, and they're stereotypic. The reason you have oily pupusas is because they stereotype us as greasers. And the reason that it's a stereotype, no self-respecting, really good chefs of the type of the cooks that we had last Friday, the women from the community, none of them were greasy. They're all very healthy, and they made a point to say, this is vegan, this is non-gluten. This is, they understand all of these, and they know how to cook, but that's in their homes. And we don't control that out in the public. So take back our food.
Right. Demolish our capitalism.
Yes.
It's diplomacy. I'm going to take the tacos to Moscow for the 4th of July.
Oh, wow. I'm
the invited chef. I was asked by the U.S. ambassador to Russia in Moscow to be the invited chef to cook the food for the official 4th of July celebration in Moscow. Yeah, that'll be this next July.
Okay.
So I said, we're going to do tacos. And they said, he said, oh, well, we can get flour tortillas in Moscow.
Oh my God. You're like, no. We'll just make them. You're like, I'll bring my own bag of maize with me.
We're going to make flour tortillas. Flour tortillas. Because that's from our region. And I said, well, they can't be shipped because the agriculture and so forth and the customs. I'll bring them in my suitcase. I said, no, they'll probably confiscate them and give you hassle at the border.
Well,
so we decided that the tortillas will become diplomatic.
Okay.
I love it.
I'm shipping them by diplomatic pouch to the embassy.
I love
directly.
It.
Directly. So tortilla diplomacy, hello.
I love it. Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. This has been super enlightening for me. I'm sure for everyone else as well. But like, God, I could just listen like all day long, but we don't
thank you
have
so
all
much.
Day.
Thank you.
Thank you for just coming in and
No, but like, I really hope that like, you know, A, maybe you can come back, and B, I hope to make it to the next, what is it, like your next preview, because mine and I are both out of town. Otherwise, we've been like, yeah, let's like get on this. But thank you again for coming on. But for our listeners out there, if you haven't yet, please check us out on Spotify. And if you want to check out more of Adan's work, you can check out his website at adanmedrano.com. If you need me to spell it, it is AdanMedrano.com. His Instagram is Adan it's like Adan Medrano, but there's like an extra M in the middle.
It's Adan M. Medrano.
There you go. I can't read either.
That's my mother's maiden name.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I can't read. It's fine. And that's the same for his Twitter. It's Adan M. Medrano. And his Facebook is facebook.com/ Adan Houston. And his email is adan@jmcommunications.com.
Yeah.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you later.
Bye. Bye. I really like that interview with Adan. I really feel like my soul felt a little replenished by talking to him, because I felt like I learned a little bit more about Texas indigenous cultures. Not like expansive, right? But like just like a little bit of touch of that. And I'm really excited to possibly be able to go to a preview of his, because I know he had one not too long ago. But what about you, Mai? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, the episode is... Or I guess the
interview.
The interview is great. Yeah, the interview was great. I mean, I feel like I knew a lot already.
Yeah.
Because I watch a lot of cooking shows. And if you are friends with me, you know that I like cooking a lot. And I cook for a lot of people.
Yeah, you do.
Of course.
Yeah, you do.
But yeah, I think a lot of that stuff I kind of knew, because I like to learn about, you know, other cultural things. And he seemed very informed. I mean,
yeah,
he's been in the industry for a long time, so
yeah,
and like being able to travel and get all these people's opinions and or not opinions, but like styles of the
and
way
perspectives and all that.
But yeah, other than that, I think that was like the only thing. And I loved how he was just very hard-hitting about the homogenous roles in within those communities.
Yeah.
When it comes from like women or men.
You could tell he's very passionate.
Right.
Yeah. What about you, Indisha? How'd you feel about the interview?
I thought it was great. He's really, really nice. He seems super passionate, really informed. I learned a lot of stuff that I did not know about just indigenous culture in Texas, because he's right. It doesn't get talked about a lot at all. And it's almost kind of not even readily available unless you actually already know. So now I know what to research later, and I kind of want to read his books too.
Yeah,
same. Really, really interesting. I'm not much of a cook, but I want to be one. I don't know. It's always been presented to me as another chore.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, God damn it, cooking. Here
that
we
can
go.
Like really kill it for you too when it's presented like a chore.
Yeah, I've always seen it more as a thing I have to do, not as a thing that I love to do or I'm passionate about doing. And
yeah.
I'm not that skilled with cooking, so it almost makes me kind of nervous, because then I'm like, well, I can't afford to fuck up ingredients and waste food. So his perspective of it is actually really, really interesting. And I think I would want to check out his books and learn a lot more about the stuff he's preaching and talking about, and maybe make some indigenous Mexican dishes of my own.
Yeah, let me know when you do that.
Yeah. Excuse you.
Let me know when you're digging up a hole in the ground and you're about to make some stone leaf.
Yeah.
You know what? I will let you know. I'll send you a picture.
And he's just going to do it to spite you at this point now.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
How very Gemini of you, Andisha.
I'm going to do it just to spite you. My fury will power me on.
Amazing.
As it does for most things.
Amazing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Anyway, I think we're all ready to go to bed. So I'm going to go ahead and just sign off for all of us. But thank y'all again for supporting our podcast. We really couldn't have make it grow like we wanted to without your support. If you haven't yet, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you stream your podcasts on. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, which is at Tavir Queer Podcast. And we have a Twitter that I think Mai is working on updating a little bit more regularly, but it's Veer_QueerHTX. And with that, I am Julian.
Mai.
Andy.
And we will see you next time. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.